can't say it enough because we can't believe we're saying it.
You are here for the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports, Ira Kaufman, and he is presented by Bill Curry Ford. 61 years, Tampa's first family of Ford, still family owned, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. They've been serving the community like you wouldn't believe. Get to BillCurryFord.com. GM Sean Sullivan is ready to help you personally, and that's not a joke. He's a friend of Ira. He's a friend of all of us at JoeBucksFan.com, and he loves Bucks fans, and he's your friend in the car business. Whatever you need, reach out directly. Hey, Sean, I got a lease. I want to get out of it. I want to get into this. What can you do? How can you help me? What should I be looking at? That's Sean Sullivan there for you all the time. Call him, email him. His contacts are at BillCurryFord.com, where you can also read about the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. Bill Curry Ford. Bucks fans, we are back with the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports. The draft is done, and this is our first podcast of the week at JoeBucksFan.com and all the podcast platforms out there where you get to hear the king of Pasco County, the baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the custodian of Canton, Ira Kaufman, presented by Bill Curry Ford. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. And Sage, you have taken us through the first three rounds of the draft and a lot of other stuff, which was part of last podcast. Now we're going to dive into the rest of the draft and some other things that have been happening. How are you, Ira?
Doing well, my friend. I got through a week where I didn't eat my diet stuff for three nights out of seven, and I'm back to where I started about a week ago, so that makes me happy this week, unless you want to take me to Burns Isbitz. I'm back on the beam, and we're going to dive into this draft because, Lee, I think it's clear to me at least, maybe not to you two hoodlums, but to me, I believe Light went away from his previous draft philosophy, and I mean that in a good way, because I think he took advantage of this rare situation that the Tampa Bay Bucks were in, and he realized it, and I think the accent was more on guys that we can develop 2-3 years rather than immediate impact, and that's what you do when you got 22 starters coming back from a Super Bowl team. And I also think there was a heavy, heavy emphasis on special teams, which is another indication of where the Bucks are. I mean, when you're drafting for special teams, you're in a pretty good place.
Just so everybody understands, because I'm not in the clear, what did you believe or do you believe was Light's philosophy prior to this spring?
I believe it was very, very much experienced college players, lots of tape, dinging guys that don't have a deep resume on a collegiate level. We're not going to take that guy. We're going to shy away from him. And this year, Joe Tryon, all of 14 starts. I don't think they ever would have took a guy like that in the first round. 14 collegiate starts. We want him. We believe in him. We think we can coach him up. Trask, a two-year starter. 2 years. You know, the third-round pick's got a lot of college tape. I understand that. And he wouldn't have been drafted if it wasn't for the Senior Bowl and his possibilities as an interior lineman, which he's never played before other than tackle on that line. So I saw a dramatic shift in the philosophy of the Bucks, and that's what happens when you're not drafting for need, pressing need, and you don't think you need guys that make an immediate impact. I think it was a much different draft for the Bucks than usual.
The guy from Notre Dame, you said it, he hasn't played those interior positions. He does have a boatload of experience, high-level experience.
Yes.
But I think that was a Jason Light pick through and through. Light has a track record. If you do well in the Senior Bowl practices and Senior Bowl, you're very much on his radar. And what springs to mind immediately is Ali Marpet. Ali Marpet was a left tackle, granted at Division III. He never played inside at all in Division III. And look at the level he played at. I mean, Division III is glorified high school ball. I'm sorry, Allie. I'm sorry other people played Division III. I've seen Division III. I actually covered Division III for a while in my career. It's glorified high school. So the Notre Dame guy, Hainsley, that's a light pick through and through, Senior Bowl. apparently this Mr. Irrelevant, the linebacker from Houston, it was the same way, that he played very good at the Senior Bowl week. And he's got a lot of experience, if I recall correctly. Yeah, the first two picks, I agree. But after that, these guys seem like they have a lot of experience.
Ira, let me run down the picks real quick for our folks who maybe turn off the TV after the first round. There's a lot of people who do that. Yeah. Fourth round, Jalen Darden, wide receiver, North Texas, returner as well. Fifth round, K.J. Britt, linebacker, Auburn, round seven, because the Bucs traded their sixth round pick to move up in the draft to get to the Seahawks spot and draft Darden. Round seven, Chris Wilcox, cornerback, BYU. Round seven, Grant Stewart, the guy Lee just mentioned, a linebacker, a captain out of the University of Houston. And to pile on what Lee said, Ira, I'll throw in Alex Kappa, who turned heads at the Senior Bowl, a Division II player who was just a tackle in college, and they liked him inside, like other teams did. So got to take that one pick away from you a little bit.
Well, I understand, but these projections don't always work. Now, let's look at Morpet. They wanted him at center at some point. In fact,
yeah, it's true.
And I believe, Lee, I think you'd agree. They thought of him at center right from the start.
Light even said that the weekend he was drafted.
And it didn't work out great, and they got Jensen, who's been good. They got Jensen. But if Morpet would have worked at center, they wouldn't have went out and got Jensen.
Sage, I think that's a tiny bit fuzzy and murky waters there. I mean, J.R. Sweezy, if he worked out here at guard, then Morpet would have been a fine center, most likely. And the Bucs did have a top 10 offense with Morpet at center. He was not the problem at center. It was just ill-advised, because I think he's better at guard. But I think he was a good center. So you continue.
So as far as Hainsey, Steve, I mean, he's got no experience playing guard. He's got no experience playing center. Looked good in the Senior Bowl. Maybe they got the coaching staff that can pull this off. Maybe. And, Steve, you got to clear something up for me, Steve. Maybe we shouldn't talk about it on the podcast, but we talk about everything on this podcast.
Uh-oh.
Steve, as far as offensive linemen, and Hainsey in particular, is Joe Gilbert responsible? Is Harold Goodwin? What's going on with the offensive line?
Sure.
And I'm not sure how they share those responsibilities, Steve. What's going on there?
They cut it right down the middle, and I confirmed it during Joe Gilbert's Super Bowl news conference. He had said it previously on the Buccaneers radio network. He handles the tackles, and Harold Goodwin handles the inside guys. Simple as that, as Lovie Smith would say.
But Goodwin's title is run game coordinator, so that doesn't necessarily mean he's working with the interior guys.
I'm telling you how it breaks down at One Buck Place. Harold Goodwin coaches the centers and guards all week long, and Joe Gilbert handles the tackles. They split up the leadership in the meetings, so they're co-leaders when they have the full group together, and that's how they do it.
Bill Muir's shaking his head, Lee. The old O-line coach who did a good job, with the 0-2 champions, because that was not a exceedingly talented offensive line, but Muir got the job done, and they were playing well by the end of that season. Any line with Kenyatta Walker, as one of your starting tackles, it's not going to be compared to the Pittsburgh Steelers of 1974.
Sure.
Lee, they're so specific, and the staff is so large. It's so large. Used to have just a DB's coach, used to handle corners and safeties, not anymore. Used to have an offensive line coach, used to handle all five starters, not anymore, not in Tampa. Boy, they really go into the weeds over here in Tampa, Lee, in terms of the coaching staff.
Well, Ira, you took the words right out of my mouth. I'm going to mention Bill Muir, and I know you and him had a nice relationship. He was a very good offensive line coach. Remember, at one point, he had the title of offensive coordinator.
Yes.
And we all know there was no chance. There wasn't a snowball's chance in hell he was calling plays.
Right, right.
One thing that's worth noting, and it's just not something that would be talked about ever, but it's worth noting since you brought it up. Bruce Arians' record size coaching staff, and it was confirmed previously that it's a record. That coaching staff, it paid off during COVID because they were able to split up into smaller groups. And I do remember hearing Goodwin and Gilbert talk about how they basically really tried to never be in the same room. So just in case they had to quarantine or whatever it was, that they were sort of split up. in a big way. So it was unique this year. It's unique in general for the Bucks, and things will get back to normalish this season, but they're still dividing it up that way. It's unique, but somehow it all works perfectly.
Yeah, you know, based on what I saw in 2020, and Lee, I know you'll agree, we cannot quibble in any manner with Bruce Arians' coaching staff. Zero.
No, exactly. That's why, you know, I can't, you know, there's some people just going bananas about the Bucks draft, not in a good way. And my personal philosophy, and I'm with Steve, my personal philosophy is these guys earn the benefit of the doubt, the Bucks. They've earned the benefit of the doubt. They really have. I mean, all their quote-unquote questionable picks in the past have all balled out. They won a Super Bowl. So I can't quibble with any of these guys. Number one, for the first time in forever, I wasn't all in on the draft like I had been, because usually by Halloween I was in draft mode. Sad as it was, that was the state of the Bucks. And I really didn't get into the draft until a couple weeks ago. So I really haven't watched these guys. They seem to know what they're doing. So I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Ira, that's let me throw this point at you. The people, I think it's important to represent the people now. Lee mentioned fans. We did a poll at Joe Bucks Fan on, you know, grade the draft. I don't like to do that immediately after. I like to let the hatred simmer or the ecstasy calm down a little bit. And the draft poll, which popped on Sunday night late, we've got, Ira, a total of 16%, about 16.5% of Bucks fans, 1 in 6, graded the draft a B- or less for the Bucks. So, you know, that's your faction out there. You're 1 in 6 who's, you know, kind of cranky about the draft, doesn't feel that great of it. The rest of them were B and better. The winning total was B+ at 29. I would have given the Bucks a B, which was the second choice at 25%. And, you know, it's goofy to grade a draft out of the gate. But do you have a grade you want to slap on it? Oh, great, Sage.
I believe I'd be where you are, Steve. I'd give it a B. Not a B+, but a B. Because you got to take, you know, factors in that they had the last pick in these rounds, and they didn't have a pick till 32. And, you know, if you're looking for immediate impact, you know, you're not going to find it. I know Lee and I have a little bit of a disagreement maybe on trying. Certainly we don't disagree on Trask. You're not going to see him in 2021. You're not going to see Kyle Trask. You'll see him in the preseason, you know. And as far as Hainsey, You're probably not going to see him. But, Lee, you got to put the context of having the last pick in every round. And, you know, in that regard, I think Tryon could be a player 2 years down the road. Trask could be in the mix in 2 years or 3 years, whenever Brady decides to hang it up. Could be. I'm not sure Arians would be coaching Trask. Lee, I don't think he would. If I had to bet on it, if Trask's going to be an NFL starter, I think it'll be under another head coach.
I agree.
Because I kind of think Arians will go out with Brady, and maybe he should go out with Brady. All things considered, age, health, you know, their fantastic relationship. But that's a story for another day. I give him a B, Lee. Where are you on the grade?
I kind of think B's fair. It seems like they got a steal in Darden. And I know a lot of people about Darden. Oh, he went to North Texas. Oh, you know, that's a rot. You know, the Conference USA is a rotten conference. But, well, you know what? There's a whole lot of good wide receivers in the NFL that came from small schools. And one springs to mind immediately. A guy by the name of Antonio Brown. And you know what? I just literally just wrote this. It popped right before your podcast started, Ira. I referred to him as everybody's favorite Cocker Spaniel. Scotty Miller, he also went to a small school. To me, that means nothing when it comes to wide receivers. I mean, for goodness sake, the greatest wide receiver of all time came from a small school. So I'm not knocking that against Darden. And everything I read, the Bucks may have gotten a steal with Darden. They had every right to trade up to get him because they probably didn't expect him to be there. A lot of people didn't. A lot of insiders, that is. Arians keeps talking about this guy's the next coming of Emmanuel Sanders. Well, there's a guy that went to a small school. SMU. I never heard anybody compare SMU to LSU. So, and I really like this Hainsey. I really like this guy. You know, I couldn't pick him out of a lineup, but if you start 37 games for Notre Dame, the way they pumped out offensive linemen the last 2 years, including your favorite guard that plays for Indianapolis at Notre Dame, which I think you could argue was a top five team the last 4 or 5 years. Guy was doing something right.
Well, yeah, I think Zach Martin went to Notre Dame, the great guard for the Cowboys.
I forgot to mention this earlier. Sean is stoked that the Bucs drafted Robert Hainsey. He loves that pick. And for Sean Sullivan to rave about a Bucs pick, you know he's in the tank for Robert Hainsey.
Steve, I want to throw this in on the Darden pick. Obviously, the Bucs really wanted him. They really wanted him. And they didn't want to lose this guy to another team, and they didn't think he would last, till their next pick. I'll say this. You know, Lee talks about, returns, and I threw water on it last week saying, not they're looking for a return guy, and guys don't return a lot of kickoffs anymore, and they don't. Mm-hmm. You know, and by the way, Pinion is fantastic on these touchbacks. You know, I think he's the best in the league, Pinion. Mm. And that's a good factor for the Bucks. But I'll say this about Darden. Mickens did, he was okay on kickoff returns. He was a lousy punt returner. I mean, 6 yards a punt return, 14 is your longest punt return. 14 yards, that's it. And so I'll say this, Steve, If he can return one kickoff, one, for 65 yards or one punt for 40 yards, and it helps win them one freaking game, one out of 17 games, that could make all the difference in playoff seeding or something like that. So in those terms, I don't think he's going to get on the field very much, if at all, as a receiver. I mean, they're loaded. I don't see him, getting ahead of Tyler Johnson on the pecking order. I don't see it. But he's got a real good chance to win the return job, Lee. And one strong return can win you a ball game. It can.
Of course. Sure can.
Well, Sage, look, just like one return can change a game and subsequently change a season, one phone call can do the same thing, and that's to Florida's Elite Restoration. I'm going to get a little personal here, Ira. I had a flood in my home going back 6 years, I think it is now, 7 years, and a lot of damage, and I ended up getting ripped off by a restoration company, big time, like unbelievable, multiple lawyers involved, and everybody sort of explained to me that I got screwed, and I should have called Florida's Elite Restoration. That's the bottom line, because they're honest, because they understand the industry. And Josh Martin, the head of Florida's Elite Restoration, he worked on the insurance side, and he knows all the tricks and all the games and all the realities of that. And his restoration company is your first phone call, should be, if you have any sort of flood or mold in your home, because they're going to give you an honest, free assessment at your home. They'll even bring out their thermal imaging cameras and do a full, thorough situation assessment. And they'll work with your insurance company if that's what's necessary. They'll do mold mitigation if that's what's necessary. FloridasElitereStoration.com. Check them out. Remember that you can call them 24/7, that you're going to get that free, honest assessment. And it's important. I'm passionate about it, Ira. I'm cutting you off. I'm taking it all the way myself. FloridasElitereStoration.com. And they love the Bucks, and they're local, and they're family-owned. Don't mess around. You have a problem, you call them. Well, Sage, a couple things. I agree with you on the returning situation. Look, Light in the past has chased a returner with Kalen Clay, Robert Haran, all guys' names that you don't want to hear if you're a Bucks fan. And
Robert Haran.
they really never prioritized returner before in a way that they just did, even in the offseason. And you know that I was blabbering on and on that you had an active all-pro returner in Cordarrelle Patterson on the market,
yeah,
who terrorized the Bucks in Chicago last season, and they didn't sign him. And he didn't even sign for a lot of money, and he knows Tom Brady, and he went to Atlanta. So I have to assume, because I believe in Jason Light, and Lee, I don't think it's more clear than this. When your team sucks, you're not doing a good job, front office. When your team is good, you're doing a great job, and there's not a lot of in-between, and we're not about to throw a bunch of cold water on what Jason Light has just accomplished. The guy should have been executive of the year last year. That's the bottom line, and certainly he deserves our respect and trust in the draft. But I really wonder, maybe we'll get an answer someday, did they feel that we're going to get Darden no matter what, and we're not going to chase Patterson in free agency because he was such a classic Buccaneers free agent possible signing here, and they didn't do it.
It's a risk, Steve, because you don't know how the draft's going to fall in terms of Darden, and you're not going to take him in the first two rounds. So, Lee, I understand what Steve's saying in terms of passing up on Patterson, thinking you're going to get Darden, but Lee, that's dicey going into a draft thinking you're going to get a guy in the fourth round. You just don't know that. You don't know that.
A little dicey, but maybe they had their eyes on someone besides Darden as well.
Right.
That's true. And, if you trust your intel, Ira, and you're not afraid because you're the Super Bowl champs and you're loaded, if you're not afraid to trade up or trade away a lot of late picks or even maybe one next year, you have a little more confidence, I think, in getting a guy like Darden. But I want to throw this out there, Ira. These other guys they drafted, Darden, Britt, Wilcox, Stewart, these are special teams guys. Even Jason Light said, KJ Britt, he didn't start right away, so I didn't see him that much with Carlton Davis and Jamel Dean when I was scouting at Auburn, and he only played two games last year, but he's a guy. And the other players are, Chris Wilcox, the cornerback, no interceptions in college. That's not a guy you expect a lot from at corner. No. The last no interception type of corner we drafted kind of early. MJ Stewart, no picks in his last couple of seasons. He's gone. Yeah. But Stewart as well, special teams guy all the way. So in a sense, Ira, I want to throw this to you and Lee. Those final four picks, they drafted special teams, which they believed was a need. So in a sense, they drafted for need in those final four rounds.
In a sense, Steve, but also in a sense, Lee, it really shows you, put his exclamation mark, on where this franchise is, Lee, because in the past, let's be honest, fourth round and fifth round picks for the Bucs, we were thinking the guy might be able to start.
Yeah.
Lee,
yeah.
I mean, what a sea change at one Buc place, and a fantastic one at that they can throw all these resources at special teams. And I don't blame them when you're bringing back every freaking starter and you're adding Bernard and you got Antonio Brown back. I mean, Lee, there ain't much room at the end, baby.
That's right. Yeah, I love the verb you use, sea change. Very much so. How exactly motivated and dedicated were the Bucs to improving special teams? They let Anthony Auclair walk out the door for chump change. He was a pretty good special teams player. Ryan Smith was a pretty good special teams player. Now, if you put it on the scale, what are you more worried about, Antonio Claire or Antonio Brown? I mean, I get that. I understand that. But how exactly dedicated and focused were they on the special teams when they let a couple of good special teams players go?
Lee, I think they definitely didn't want to lose Ryan Smith. But, something had to give.
And we'll see how dedicated they are to special teams with the survival rate of Justin Watson. I know Justin Watson was not active all the time, but when he was active, he was a good special teams player, certainly better than he is at wide receiver. Got a lot of drops, doesn't run good routes. I know Brady got frustrated with him. So we'll see how actually focused and dedicated, determined they are to improve their special teams with the survival of Justin Watson, he was on the bubble before. He's very much bubblicious right now with the drafting of Drayden.
It's an interesting angle, Ira, because your buddy, Rick Goslin, a man who Bill Belichick consults with, literally, the proof is there. Belichick has brought it up. He does his annual ratings and rankings, rather, for special teams. And last year, the Bucs special teams were tied for 22nd best in the NFL after they were dead last in 2019. Now, we know Bruce Arians would never get rid of anyone on his coaching staff. It's got to be the players. So maybe they just thought collectively that bunch of special teamers that Lee mentioned, those core guys, just kind of suck, and they're looking for some new blood. And guys like Murphy Bunting and Jamel Dean and Mike Edwards, they came in out of college, and ultimately they really weren't very good special teamers. They weren't special teamers. So maybe they're just looking for a new heightened kind of angry crop. And just the fact that they're talking about Joe Tryon playing special teams, Ira, that reminded me right away, even though it's different, but the Bucs had their top sacks guy, their leading sack man, Jaquie Smith running down on kickoffs, and he blew his freaking knee out in like week two of the of that season. I think it was 2017, which was just a mind blower.
If you're going to focus on special teams, the first thing you're going to realize is you're in damn good shape in terms of kicking. You got a good punter. You got a damn good kicker. So you're not worried about that. Well, now it's your coverage units and your return guys. And, you know, we've talked about it. This return group, it just hasn't gotten the job done. If you see a 12-yard punt return, I look at the Kemper in the press box, and he's doing cartwheels. I mean, you know, which is a hell of a sight, by the way. They just haven't had. Remember, you know, we're back to the old days. Remember when Spurlock was the first guy, you know, in franchise history? I mean, return game and Bucks, they just don't go together, guys. They just don't go together.
Run, Michael, run.
You know,
we're my hero.
We've never had a Devin Hester. Never had a Billy White Shoes Johnson. I mean, these guys win you games. They win you games. You know, and some people think Devin Hester's a Hall of Famer. And who knows? One day he might get in the room for discussion. And if he does, he might have a little bit of a case. So I'm with you, Steve. They really did focus on special teams. And it's another indication. It's another – and we can't say it enough. We can't say it enough because we can't believe we're saying it. We can't believe we're saying that the Bucs have the best roster in the National Football League. But I think they do.
Sea change.
Sea change.
Sea change. There it is. Like I relieve in the Tribune. It's a sea change for the better.
They got the best roster in the National Football League. I can't believe I'm saying it. Can't believe it.
It's just fun. Yeah, I believe it. I believe it. But it's fun as hell. I surely wouldn't have believed it if you told me that after the 2019 season. So that's what makes it extra special. I mean, they still went from 7-9, no playoffs since the previous decade, to the Super Bowl title. It's unbelievable. Still unbelievable.
What team goes into a draft and one of their top priorities is, we gotta get better on the return game. I mean, that tells you a lot, Lee.
Yeah, it does.
All right, Sage, let me fire this at you. I thought this was important, Ira, because you know how much we love Big Storm beer. It's legitimate. We love Big Storm beer. You're taking home from the draft party the Tropic Pressure, Florida Ale, the Sunny Key Lime. You're drinking Kolsch. Yeah. I'm a big Bromosa fan, though it's 7% alcohol. It's not something I can enjoy very often. Lee's loves the Wavemaker Amber Ale. I know he's got other favorites as well. You know, so we love the beer. And the Bucks, though, Jason Light and his cohorts, you know, the Bucks have this partnership with Bud Light, and they drink Bud Light, on the boat parade and this and that, Bud Light, hold it up in the locker room, Bud Light. Yet there was a photo that circulated of the entire front office and Bruce Arians out at the press box in Tampa on Dale Mabry after the draft. I guess that they just, you know, 20 guys went out there to celebrate and have some food after a long day on Saturday. And they're drinking different beer, Ira. I don't like fraudulent beer drinkers, and I'm throwing the whole Bucks under the bus. So we love Big Storm beer, and when we say we love it, we really love it.
You're right. And, you know, there's a beer you didn't mention, and Lee, you might know more about it than, because you and I were drinking the same beer at the draft party. I think it starts with baby something.
No. Bay beer. Not baby.
Oh, bay beer. Bay beer, yeah.
No brewery sells beer focused on babies. Trust me.
Well, whatever you want to call it, Lee, it went down very well. And you and I were guzzling it pretty good on Thursday night. And I had not had that one, Steve. I'd had a lot of, the Kolsch and, of course, the Tropic Pressure. And this bay beer was it was quite tasty, Mr. Isbitz.
I don't know if you heard this morning. Pretty huge news with Big Storm beer. Hillsborough County, get ready. Big Storm has a tap room in Pasco at Odessa. They've got a tap room down in Southwest Florida at Cape Coral. They've got a tap room opened up at Orlando at the Amway Center, and that's open year-round, not just for Magic games. But coming soon to Ybor City, a new tap room and restaurant, Big Storm Brewing.
Wow.
The barometric pressure is falling in Hillsborough County. There's a Big Storm Brewing coming near you.
Lee, that's fantastic news. You know, and they also have a kiosk that's ready to go at Bill Curry Ford in the showroom. So,
but they don't sell beer there.
They don't sell beer there. Not yet. We shall see.
Yeah, it might be. Ira, that could be the first liquor license in the history of car dealerships granted ever.
Do you put anything past Sean Sullivan, Stevie? Do you put anything past that, man?
All right, listen, Sage, the Bay Beer is one of their core beers. You can find them all at BigStormBrewery.com, BigStormBrewery.com. Eat some Big Storm food, A-plus menu. You can order takeout, beautiful tap rooms, as Lee mentioned. All right, Ira, so look, the draft is in the books. Now the coach is going to get their hands on these guys. Eventually a rookie mini camp is coming up. They're going to have OTAs, whether the veterans show up or not. And it really sucks, though, for these guys' development without the veterans. Now, it doesn't mean the coaches can't coach, but you know what? A guy like Jalen Darden, if he's spending 12 spring practices around Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, that's going to help him get things done right out of the gate versus, I did this all through May and June, and oh my gosh, these guys come in here and they I was doing it wrong kind of thing. So, and plus, they don't get the benefit of the insight if those veterans don't show up. But how much stock do you really put in the value for these rookies to have the veterans in there from day one?
I would have put a lot more stock in it, Steve, under a different coaching staff that I didn't have a lot of faith in. You know, Dirk Cutter, who I think is not a bad head coach, but I think he did himself a disservice, and I think it's proven out. Lee, this is a much better staff. It's a much better staff. And the proof is in the development of a lot of these young players that, you know, we were knocking like, quite frankly, for some of these draft picks. And, they look a hell of a lot better under this coaching staff. You know, we got to acknowledge that. And it changes our view of Jason Light. And I got a lot of faith, Lee, even without veterans around to learn from through observation and discussion. I got a lot of faith in this coaching staff, in Rapone and Kevin Ross and Foot. You know, I think Foot can bring Tryon along. I just do. Gilbert / Godwin tandem on the offensive line. They did a nice job with Kappa, did a heck of a job with Wirfs. Granted, Wirfs is, he's a great talent, but he still had to be developed a little bit because even Arian said in training camp he's getting his butt whipped. And all of a sudden in game one, he's holding his own against Cam Jordan. Something happened, Lee. Something happened.
It's pretty obvious that the Bucs have a great coaching staff. I don't know, and maybe I shouldn't use great. They have an effective coaching staff. The proof is in the pudding. They got a Super Bowl win. They developed players. I love Dirk Cutter to death, but I can't call him a good head coach because you know what? One of your main responsibilities, your core responsibility, is picking a good coaching staff. And outside of Todd Monken, and I can't remember the guy's name. He was wide receivers coach with Monken. He got results with his wide receivers. But, you know, Mike Smith, he should have never hired Mike Smith. That was set up before Cutter was even hired. He had a handshake agreement with Mike Smith. If I ever get a coach job, I'm bringing you with me. Mike Smith only decent job, decent year, was a mirage. And to his credit, the only guy that called it was Tom Bassinger, then of the Tampa Bay Times. He said, this is a mirage. You know, Mike Smith is not doing a good job. They're getting a lot of turnovers. Great. But that's covering up a lot of mistakes. And it turns out Bassinger was a bullseye. And the fact that Cutter fully ignored defense, and even he admitted it, that's not a good head coach. A good head coach hires the guys to get the job done.
Fair point, Lee. Fair point. His staff failed Dirk Cutter. Failed him miserably.
Failed Jason Light. Almost got Jason Light fired.
Yeah.
Ira, a couple things to note. Just as we look back on the draft, running back and cornerback were not positions that were addressed. And yes, they drafted a corner in the 7th round, but I think it was made very clear that no, this really isn't a guy they expect to contribute on defense. And remember, Ryan Smith basically took zero snaps the last 2 years on defense. So he's sort of a potential Ryan Smith replacement. This draft was sort of a blessing for running backs and for cornerbacks. And I say that meaning that they didn't inject any competition into these guys. And especially in the history of the NFL, there have been a lot of very late round picks, sixth and seventh round running backs that, you know, can get in there and compete. But the cornerbacks and the defensive backs, no safety taken. They got a massive thumbs up and a hug through the draft. The Gravediggers did. And yet, while we look at receiver, all of a sudden, a lot of fans are thinking, hey, this Darden, he's going to compete with Tyler Johnson right out of the gate. And boy, Scotty Miller's got to be looking over his shoulder now and finding that kind of interesting, you know, as we look at the bottom six receivers on the Bucks, the bottom three out of six. So what do you make of all that?
I'm kind of with you on the cornerback thing. It wasn't a pressing need because they don't have a pressing need. They don't have one. But you can never have enough corners. You know, I'm still not totally sold on some of these corners if the pass rush isn't outstanding and if they don't get another 48 sacks, you know, that could be they could get exposed. And I always think about the first half of that game in Atlanta, Lee. That was a disaster. You know, Matt Ryan's good, but guys were running wide open. No pressure on Ryan. He dissected them. They had no answers. I thought Atlanta should have had even more than 17 points. But they were lucky it was only 17 zip. So I was a little surprised, Lee, that with the premium picks 1 through 3, that they didn't take a corner. And I agree with Steve. Wilcox is looked at more as a special teams guy. You know, I don't think a guy that doesn't have a collegiate interception is really projected as a guy that's really going to compete at corner in your secondary. So I was a little surprised at that, Lee. I thought they would take a corner with one of the first three picks.
Well, Ira, I think the Bucks reinforce what I have been screaming about for years and will continue to scream about. Pressure, 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 pressure. There's even a study that Mike Tannenbaum's outfit did the past month, that the most important player in the NFL is not a quarterback. It's an edge rusher.
Yeah, I won't go that far.
Well, they did a study. They did a study using numbers that pressure, 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 pressure. And the answer to your question was answered in the draft. No, the Bucks didn't draft a cornerback. They drafted an edge rusher. Why is that? If you don't have pressure, every quarterback in the league can carve you up. Pressure, 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 pressure.
But, Lee, I was talking about the first three rounds as a group. And I'm not disagreeing with that first-round pick for pressure. I'm not disagreeing with that. But you had two other premium rounds to address it. And, you know, Trask certainly, you know, not going to play a role in 21. Hainsey, you know, versatile. But, you know, to me, Lee, Stinney did enough to tell me that, you know, I got some I got some confidence in case Kappa goes down again, or even more Pet.
Oh, absolutely. So, I'll take it a step further, Ira. Don't be shocked if Stinney replaces Kappa. Kappa's in a contract year. Don't be shocked if some team throws a lot of money at Kappa. If the Bucks say, we love you, Alex, but you know what? We got to spend that money elsewhere. We've got Stinney and we've got Hainsey. I'm not saying they should. I'm not saying they will. But I wouldn't surprise me. And I'm not anti-Kappa, don't get me wrong. But I would not be surprised whatsoever. You know, a lot of people got mad at me on JoeBucksFan.com. The commenters got mad at me because I said, you know what? This Darden might be your next Chris Godwin. How can you say that? You know what? Godwin's gone unless they you know, pay him an arm and a leg. There's a 50-50 chance this is Godwin's last year. Because of the money. And I don't blame him. And I'm not saying he should go. I've been on Chris Godwin's bandwagon since the moment the Bucks drafted him. But I'm also living in reality. I can easily see Darden replacing Godwin because it's going to cost the Bucks a boatload of money to keep him. And I'm not saying they should let him go. I'm not saying he will go. I'm saying they're covering their rear ends in case he does go.
It's unlikely, Steve. You got to say it's very unlikely they would franchise Godwin again for financial reasons. It would be prohibitive. Yeah, it would be prohibitive.
Yeah, I'll just say to that with the two things. With the $16 million Godwin's going to earn this year, he's not going to get that much of a raise. So he's sort of in the salary cap fold, whereas a guy like Kappa, who is going to go from, potentially is going to go from, $2 million this year in the fourth year of his deal, or $1.8 million or something, up to close to $10 million if he's a legit starting guard, young and on the free agent market. So it's a bigger raise, and usually those are the guys who end up going, the ones that represent a massive raise and change to the whole fabric of the team. But it's so far out. I mean, gosh, Kappa could have a monster year. Ali Marpet could take a step back, and maybe they trade Marpet, and say, hey, look, sorry, Kappa's better right now. We're going to go with that. So you just never know. It's just the NFL so year to year with these free agency stuff.
No question. The thought of losing Godwin, it's troubling.
Yeah.
Troubling to me. It is. Who knows about Antonio Brown? Mike Evans, he would have 8 years in the books. I mean, that's a good run for a wide receiver. He's in his prime. I'm not saying Evans isn't in his prime. Look at Julio Jones. He starts to break down, 8 years, a lot of snaps. He's had some injuries.
Yeah, Evans. Julio's been, he's always been kind of injury prone, whereas Evans is not.
Godwin showed me a lot last year, even though his numbers were down late. He showed me a lot of guts last year playing through injuries. He made some huge catches, even in the playoffs. All three of us love Godwin, what he brings to the table.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm just being realistic. I think the chances are 50-50 of him returning next year. I really do. I hate to say that, but I'm living in reality. And I think if you don't live in reality and you don't cover your rear end in the NFL, well, then it's when you get burned.
Steve, the only thing I'd add to that is I think if Godwin did leave, if he did, I would put more money on Johnson replacing him than Darden.
Mm.
Yeah, me too, Ira, yeah. Just because he's, we've seen him. Darden.
Tyler Johnson, I'm not anti-Tyler Johnson either. People also took that, you're saying Johnson can't. No, I really believe, given Arians' fetish for speed at slot, they would put Darden at slot. And oh, by the way, Darden led college football last year, led the nation in touchdowns from slot. I see them putting Darden at slot and Johnson out wide.
Sage, also with those first three picks, you could say, and most NFL executives will say, the three most important positions on the football field are, and you can put them in any order you want, are quarterback, the guy rushing a quarterback, and the guy protecting the quarterback. And that those are the three positions that they grab in the first three rounds. So, you could really say that they just drafted for depth at the most important positions.
Yeah, but Hainsey's not going to play left tackle. But I understand what you're saying. I do.
All right, Ira. Anything else on your mind here as we march toward the later this week? We've got a second podcast. Anything you want to tell Bucks fans as you head home to stuff your face with carrots and radishes and all the things you're eating these days?
And Bay beer, and wash it down with Bay beer. I want to remind our thousands of listeners. I want to remind them, Lee, there is no off season for Joe Bucks fan. There is none. We don't take freaking vacations. We don't go anywhere. In May, June, everybody disperses. July, you can't find a Buck player or Buck coach. They're all on the island, Santorini.
This island. I never heard of this island.
One of the Greek islands, my man.
Oh, really? Well,
They're hanging out with George Clooney in Italy. And what are we doing? You guys are filing 6 stories a day. We're doing 2 podcasts a week. It just keeps rolling on, and that's why we're the number one go-to site.
All right, Sage. Well, I do have one last tiny rapid fire. It's only going to take you about 8 seconds to answer, Ira, so you can take a deep breath. Before I ask you this important Bucks question, Bill Curry Ford, thank you for presenting the Ira Kaufman podcast. Sean Sullivan, he's ready for you. Just reach out, email, phone, at the dealership a mile north of the stadium. He will help you. He is the general manager. He is the boss. And that means he's going to treat you like a brother and give you a family Ira Kaufman discount. BillCurryFord.com. Our thanks to Florida's Elite Restoration. We heard from them before, Ira. You know their deal. First phone call, any sort of disaster in your home, check out all their services at Florida's Elite Restoration.com. And I know the Bay beer from Big Storm is flowing for you, Ira. But, you know, some of these things can't be had again, Ira. So I got to ask you this. You know, we don't have gambling in Florida, but, you know, people travel, people get out there, and people are interested more than ever in the Bucks and in making money, of course. And you can gamble in 20 states right now on sports. So I got to ask you this, Ira. Yes or no? Which way are you betting on these two bets? You ready?
Go ahead.
Tom Brady, $100 bet returns you $1,500 if he's MVP of the NFL season. Is that a good bet?
Yes. Yes. Yes, I'll tell you why. Because I think we'd be flabbergasted. Another one of these things you can't believe we're saying. We'd be flabbergasted if the Bucks don't make the playoffs, and mildly surprised if they don't win at least 11 games, you know, considering that's 11-6, that doesn't sound like much of a reach for this team. And when you go, you know, what we think they're going to go, 12-5, 13-4, then all of a sudden Brady's in contention. He's in contention. That's a good bet.
A contender for MVP might be aced out this year. Aaron Rodgers might be gone.
And if somebody's going to get it from the Bucks, you would think it's going to be Brady. You would think.
So, I mean, that the fact that Rodgers is in limbo for next year, that heightens the chances that Brady would win the MVP. It's one less competitor.
And one last one, Ira, real quick. $100 bet right now on the Bucks to repeat as Super Bowl champs. That's going to bring you back $750. You like that, Ira?
That's a steal, baby.
Whoa.
That's a steal. That should be like 2-1 odds. Not 7.5-1. I mean, that's a steal. There's no guarantee the Bucks are going to win it. Of course not. Of course not. But they're going to be in the mix. Lee, they're going to be in the mix. They're going to make the playoffs. They don't make the playoffs, something's wrong. You know, Brady got hurt. Something's wrong.
The only reason I can see the odds are not 2-1, like you said, Ira, is just recent NFL history.
Yeah, I agree. But who's the last guy to do it? The Kemper?
Yep. You got it, Mr. Brady.
And you know, Mr. Brady. All right. We're out.